Welcome to the Wine or Milk podcast, where each week we rewatch and review nostalgic movies from our childhood to see if it aged like wine or milk. However, this week we're celebrating the holiday season, so we're going to be watching a Christmas movie.
I can't wait. Christmas movies are so much fun. It's going to be really fun to explore a whole bunch of them.
This is going to get me into the holiday spirit, because I'm usually kind of a Grinch, but as like, you know, the Hallmark Channel and ABC start like putting out their...
Hallmark Channel?
I don't know.
That's a weird, that's a very weird...
There's so many Hallmark Christmas movies out there.
And they're all trash.
Yeah, but it's part of the holiday season.
Not for me.
You just put it on, it's mindless. They're surprisingly good. You go in with low expectations, right? I think that's how they're so good at selling themselves. You go in with zero expectations, and when it's slightly better than trash, and there's a romance at the end, you're just like, oh, it wasn't that bad.
I cannot say I share this experience with you.
Mindless holiday entertainment that makes you feel like Christmas is an exciting time to be alive, you know?
I personally prefer watching good holiday movies.
Oh, I prefer that too, but I'm just saying that's like the start. You know the holiday season is starting because Hallmark puts out their movies. And you're still going to watch them, even though you know they're going to be bad. You still will watch them every year. Probably. I will, at least.
You will.
I don't want to speak for everybody, but I will.
Well, what are we watching to kick off our holiday week?
This is hard because I usually, if we were going to do my favorite Christmas movie, it would probably be one of the traditional like holiday cartoons, like The Grinch or A Charlie Brown Christmas or one of the stop motion films like Year Without a Santa Claus.
Yep.
Those are my favorites. However, I wanted to pick like a full length feature film, in the words of Kyle.
I've been doing a lot of editing recently. We refer to every movie as a film.
I know.
I don't know why you're picking on my one pick and saying it wasn't worthy of being called a film.
I'm just being annoying. I'm just busting your chops.
You really are.
I just like
it's
to bust
Christmas.
Your chops.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, it is Christmas. But, you know, it's a term of endearment. It's an unhealthy term of endearment for me and my family is we pick on the people we like. It's like that bad trope that if you have a crush on someone, you tease them.
Yep.
That's a really unhealthy narrative to spread. Yeah, well, I do that, so.
Anyway, though, what are we watching?
We're watching Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Very cool.
One of my favorite Christmas time films.
Really had no idea this came out in 1992. What? It seems like, in my head, it's much later than that. Like, 98. I don't know why. I, like, really did not think it was this. Like, old.
Well, because it's timeless.
It is. It's pretty
timeless. It's a timeless movie, so that's probably, you know, why the year it came out is a shock to you.
Yeah, well, the first one, I think, came out in 1990, so it's about to have its... Or, actually, it is 30 years old now. That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. And it's still a classic to this day.
Both of them are classics, but why did you end up choosing the second one? Why Home Alone 2?
I think because I grew up outside of New York City, the local channels always played Home Alone, Lost in New York. I think that was just the one that was on all the time, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, the network chose that for our... They're like, oh, these New Yorkers will watch the New York movie, you know? Yeah. I didn't really see the first one much. I think I've only seen it two or three times. The one that takes place in Chicago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, I'm not really familiar with the first one, to be honest. Another one of those movies where I've seen the sequel much more than the first.
Yeah. My brother really, really liked the Home Alone series. We had, like, the trilogy on VHS.
There's a third?
Yeah, and it's garbage. There's actually, like, a ton of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is shocking to me. This is
a... And a new one's coming out for Disney+. Another theme. Disney is just gobbling everything up and making sequels.
I have mixed feelings about that. Like, remakes that are... Or, like, sequels that are far into the future.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
What?
I just realized this. I'm looking at the movie poster. Do you see the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, she's screaming. It's the Kevin.
She's doing the Kevin face.
Yeah.
No, she has her hands on her face. Like his pose in the first movie.
Yeah.
When he puts the aftershave on.
Oh, I thought that was his mom when she realizes Kevin's missing and she puts her hands to her face.
No, that's
and goes,
his
Kevin!
Iconic pose.
Is it? I can't see. My eyes are bad. It could be either or. If I squint, it's him. And if I look with my full eyes, it's his mom.
Anyway.
It's like an optical illusion. You know, the angle you look at it, you see a different thing.
Yeah. Sorry. I just, that was really cool. That was a fun little Easter egg on
that. Yeah, the movie poster has baby Kevin holding a newspaper. It looks like the New York Times. Nope. What does that say?
New York Post, I think that is.
See, I told you my eyes are bad.
I think it's actually the New York newspaper.
Yep, that's exactly what it says. Wow, I should go to the eye doctor, I think is what I'm gathering from this. But yeah, it's baby Kevin holding a newspaper, the New York newspaper, and on the headline is "The Wet Bandits Escape." Oh, the Wet Bandits. I thought it was the Sticky Bandits.
I think they were the Wet Bandits, and then they, because their old calling card was they would leave all the sinks on and flood the house, and then they became known as the Sticky Bandits. Because of this movie, he's like taping his hand and like reaching into people's pockets or something.
Huh.
Yeah, I think they transform into the Sticky Bandits in this movie.
Okay, because I don't know why the Sticky Bandits was stuck in my head.
Yeah.
And on the back of the newspaper is Kevin as the Statue of Liberty and yeah. or his mom, undetermined. Once I go to the eye doctor, I'll report back.
Thank you.
Anywho, yeah, I'm really hyped to give this movie another watch. I don't think I watched it last year.
No, I don't think we watched it last year, but we've watched it somewhat recently.
Yeah.
Like within the last 5 years for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Probably like 2 years ago.
I have to say the one thing that always stuck out to me with this movie is as a kid, I would go to the city with my grandma sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go, she would take me to see like maybe a Broadway play and we would be in the Times Square area. So I didn't know much of New York City until I was older. Like all I knew was my grandma would drive us in. We would get dinner in Times Square, which mm-hmm. is always a disaster. And then we go see a show and we go home, which was amazing. I had incredible memories doing that. But New York was like terrifying to me because I thought all of New York was just Times Square. Like even yeah. as you continue walking, it's just more of that. You yeah. know what I mean? So when I was watching this movie as a kid and he was lost in New York by himself, I was so impressed. I was like, wow, this kid has got it. He's so smart.
Yeah.
He's like, he's thriving. He's thriving.
I mean, even after living there for 3 years, I still am wicked impressed by that.
I know, right? Like when we first moved there, I didn't know how to get anywhere on the subway. I remember the first day I met someone for breakfast to help me like apply to jobs. My aunt had a friend in the city. And I was so proud of myself for taking the train. I had no transfers, but I was still really excited.
Yeah.
I did it. I made it.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And this one's pretty fun. I think, you know, when you think about it, if I like go back in time and try to imagine what it would have been like to be like a little kid or even just like an adult when these movies were coming out, like the first is really cool. It's a great premise. It's a really well done movie. I think, though, if like I was thinking about Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, and I knew it was the same people and stuff, I'd be like, how are they going to pull this off? How is it not just going to be a copy and paste of the old movie? I think they did a really, really good job continuing this film, making it unique, having callbacks to the original, but still making it like fun and unique and great. Like, I'm actually like pretty impressed with how they pulled this movie off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't seen the first movie, so it was a really great movie for me. I was like, wow, this is an original, awesome idea.
Yeah.
So the one thing, though, I knew there was a previous movie because obviously the title is Home Alone 2.
Yep.
But also because the Sticky / Wet Bandits do have a grudge.
Yeah.
So they make that clear that they don't enjoy Kevin McAllister at all.
They know him and
they know him and they're like, that kid screwed us over. Like, we're getting revenge, basically, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And what's really cool, sorry, I just realized we're seeing a lot of people again.
Yep.
Because Daniel Stern, he was in Rookie of the Year
mm-hmm.
and directed it. And then Tim Curry was in the Rugrats movie.
Yep. But we didn't really see him. We just heard him.
We heard his wonderful, iconic voice.
We get to see him with our own eyes this time.
Yeah.
So since this is my pick and I see it pretty regularly, mm-hmm. what do you remember? Are there certain things you remember? Are there certain parts of it that are very nostalgic to you?
I basically remember the whole thing. I because, like I said, my brother loved these movies when we were little, so I watched it a whole lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going on vacation. Kevin gets separated at the airport. He's stuck in New York by himself. Has his dad's credit card. Goes to the hotel. Ends up then going to his like uncle and aunt's house that's getting renovated. That's where he gets encountered with the Sticky Bandits. Hijinks ensue. And then there's the pigeon lady that he's afraid of. That in my head kind of looks like Susan Boyle, but I don't think they actually do. There's actually a really good comparison online between the pigeon lady and, what's his name? That terrible Brit. Oh, right. Piers Morgan. They do kind of they look pretty similar.
I'm offended for her on her behalf.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. It's definitely not a compliment.
Gotcha. He sucks.
But yeah, I feel like I remember a lot of it. I remember the big plot points, you know, like conflicts and stuff that they build up. I don't remember everything that ties it together, so I'm excited to see that.
The Sticky Bennets, they're going to rob a toy store right after Christmas Eve when they have all the money in the till. And Kevin befriends the owner of the store, though. He stops their robbery, and then they chase him back to the house, his aunt and uncle's house.
Yeah.
I know that's a piece of it. That's how the Sticky Bennets and Kevin get tied back together in a new city.
Oh, it's really fun. And I think one of the things that's really charming is they capture the spirit of... Or, like, I think they make a very accurate portrayal of a little kid stuck in New York with a credit card and what they would do.
Yeah, like, ordering all the room service, getting all the ice cream, yeah. And, like, going to a toy store. And, I don't know, those are the big ones. Ice cream and toys, what more do you need
yeah.
as a kid? And but then he makes a new friend, you know?
And, he grows up a little bit, you know? It's really cute. And I also love, like I said, they did a good job making it a unique film, but calling back as well. I really love some of those callbacks. Like, they have that movie, the, like, put your hands in the air, like that. My Tommy gun won't, whatever.
Oh, that's my favorite.
I can't remember the quotes.
That is the most nostalgic scene of the whole movie for me.
Yeah.
Is when he's like, get on your knees and tell me you love me.
Yep.
And he's at the hotel staff realizes that Kevin might be by himself.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin has the movie playing in the background. He's, like, pausing it strategically. So... The hotel staff think it's his dad, like, talking and things like that.
Yep.
It's really funny. Oh, and also
Curry
the scene.
Does great with that scene.
Yeah. And also the scene where he records his uncle singing in the shower and says, like, you get out of here, you pervert. And yep. He has, like, the blow-up clown doll in the shower and he plays the audio tape of that.
And so it's like, those have great callbacks to the original, but they still make them unique and fun and... You know, a new experience. And I think that's part of what makes this movie really, really successful, really charming. And I'm pumped to watch it again. It's been a little bit. And so I'm excited to revisit it.
Those are callbacks to the original?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just OG
little
content.
Little callbacks. Because in the original one, he had like them dancing in front of the window. And he like set up his train track. And so it looked like people were home and stuff.
Mm.
So it was like technology he knew how to do use. Like he had done it before, but then he uses it in a different way type thing.
That was the other thing. I was always impressed because I was like, I could never build human beings that move around that look like they could be my parents. Like, I couldn't build these contraptions and these death traps he sets for people as a kid. Like, it's just beyond my skill set. Even as an adult, I don't think I could pull that off. And that was always impressive to me. Like, you know, like when you were a kid, you would try to like put a body in your bed so you can like, if your mom came in to look, she'd think you were sleeping. But really, you were like, I don't know. Off downstairs. I don't know. We didn't have it downstairs. I don't know why I would need to do that. But I know I would try after watching these movies.
Yeah, it was like a trope.
Yeah, and it was just like I had like a doll that I had in the bed. It clearly was not me. And like my pillow does not look like my body under the blanket.
And,
you know?
And he also does it in like 2 hours. Like he booby traps the whole house.
So fast. I think you did a great rundown of what you remember. I would say my definition of this movie is young kid tries to commit premeditated murder. Throughout the entire film.
No, he's very careful to only really maim them.
Dude, that should kill people. The things he was doing should kill people or could kill people.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Well, we should just spend the whole second half of this talking about all of the booby traps he set.
It's legit premeditated too. It's not manslaughter. It's not in the moment. I understand it might be self-defense, but my understanding was you're not allowed to booby trap your property. Different states might have different laws, but I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to do that.
Well, he's only 10. We can... Actually, in the first one, he was like 8, so...
Dude, there's a lot of 10-year-olds that are tried as adults, so... I don't know what to tell you. I'm just saying I think he goes a little too hard. I'm not gonna lie. I know they're trying to rob him and stuff, but it's a bit far.
That's fair. It's fair.
They're not trying to murder him. They're just trying to steal his stuff.
I think in this one, they're trying to potentially kill him because they want revenge. There's nothing in that house to rob. I think they want to kill him.
I thought they just wanted to...
Or hurt him. Spank him.
Fair enough. Maybe in this one, yes, there's not something to rob. But still, maybe this is a darker movie than I realized.
It's a little dark. But we talked about what we remembered. What did you used to think about it, though? Like, it seems like you loved it as a kid.
What did I think about it? I thought he was so smart and mm-hmm. he was so independent and capable. Like, I would have been crying and, like, trying to call my mom immediately. Like, I wouldn't have gotten that far. Even on the plane. Like, I would have been panicking in the airport and not been like, oh, yeah, there's my dad. Let me just get on this random plane.
Yep.
Like, I'm an anxious child. Well, I'm an anxious person, and I was definitely an anxious child. There's no way in hell I would have gotten on that plane without seeing my mom, you know?
Yeah.
And if I got into the city and I landed, I would be talking to TSA, like, before we even landed, be like, this is not where I'm supposed to be.
Getting the stewardess on the plane and being like, you need to turn this thing around.
Yep.
I need to be in wherever they're going, Florida or whatever.
Everybody's going to Florida. No, I'd be crying. I'd be asking for extra cookies on the plane for comfort. Yeah, I would not have survived or thrived the way Kevin did. But yeah, I love this movie. I remember being like very impressed and being like, I could never engineer this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have that ability. My brain doesn't work in that way.
So do you think it'll hold up on a rewatch? What's your prediction?
I've seen it recently. I think it has a good message as a whole. And Kevin,
defend yourself from being murdered.
Like I said, I don't think he was trying to get murdered, so I don't know if I can endorse that. I think, like, the whole Christmas spirit and making friends and, like, the prejudgment he has with the woman who feeds all the pigeons and things, you know? Yep. I think that's a good message. It's a positive message. And that message feels very Christmassy to me. I feel like a lot of Christmas movies try to do that. And, like, at the end of the day, you really do want your family. That's the thing, too, because he's pissed at his family. Because they're all coming and invading his home, and his cousin annoys him and wets the bed, and, like, Buzz is a jerk to him.
Yeah.
So he's actually really excited to be away from his family for Christmas at first. But by the end of the movie, he's, like, really missing his family, too.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good message. Especially as a kid, I could relate to that. I had two brothers that were close to my age, and we had a small house. And we all shared a bedroom together, so I can definitely relate to getting frustrated with your family and wanting your own space, but then being separated and instantaneously crying. So
it sounds like you think it's going to be a wine still?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a wine, despite the murder plot.
What would it take for this to be a milk, you think?
More Donald Trump in it than I remember.
There's just one scene.
I know. I don't know. I guess if the bandits are like... I think for me as an adult, like the physical humor of it actually makes my body hurt, and I don't find it as funny.
Mm. It's more cringy because you're, like, identifying with the pain.
Yeah, I think, like, as a kid, I thought it was hilarious to see the guy get hit in the head with a paint can. But as an adult, I'm like, that is a TBI right there.
Doesn't he, like, step on a nail at one point, too?
I don't know. It's just horrid.
It's pretty gruesome.
It makes my body ache. So I guess I haven't seen it in a while. I think as an adult, when I was watching it, that was what stood out to me as the thing that I don't think held up as much. But it's also, like, kind of the thesis of the movie in some ways. Like, that's what the movie's building up to, is the culmination of the movie is the wet bandit / sticky bandits getting injured.
Yeah.
Which maybe doesn't make for the best movie, but I think it's going to be a wine.
Yeah, I think it'll be a wine, too. I can't really think of anything that will make this a milk for me. I think it's going to be pretty solid. But give us some of those facts.
Sweet. So, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, was directed by Chris Columbus, produced by John Hughes, written by John Hughes, starring Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern, John Hurd, Tim Curry, Brenda Fricker, and Catherine O'Hara. Music by John Williams.
I do remember the music being great.
The music is good. I feel like I think I remember the main theme. Like, without having to go back.
Usually
the music, like, comes back to me as I watch it, but I think I could tell you what it is now. Yeah, I'm not musically inclined, but if I had to, like, hum it, you know, I think I could do it.
Yeah, it's in my head as well. But also worth noting, this was wildly successful. Like, wildly, wildly successful. $28 million budget, and it made $359 million at the box office. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, I think the first was so successful. That's why this one.
Yeah.
Came out so great and, like, brought in such an audience. I don't know if I said this. It came out in 1992.
Yep.
November 20th. So.
Good timing.
So let's give it a watch and see if it's a Christmas eggnog or a Christmas. Well, I guess eggnog would be a milk.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Or a Christmas Prosecco.
Mulled wine.
Yeah, like a spiced wine. Is it a spiced wine or an eggnog? I don't know.
I like that.
I actually like eggnog, and you can put rum in there.
But I don't think it would age well.
Probably not. Probably not. A wine probably would age better. Universally, wine ages pretty well. So let's see how the McAllisters do. scared me. I wasn't expecting that. Can I hear that in my nightmare tonight? Jesus.
That's been stuck in my head for the last 24 hours. Like, literally, just that little bit. 24 hours.
My first note is, this is 2 hours. Is there enough content for 2 hours? And my second note is, the music slaps you in the face right from the credits.
Oh my god, yeah. It's so familiar. Just like, bam, music.
No, it's like a straight injection into my brain. I was like, wow, this music is going to be in my head for the next 4 weeks.
I think that there's this spot on my brainstem that, like, this soundtrack has been embedded and it will live there forever. And scientists far in the future could read it off of my brainstem and recreate the song. It is that embedded in my DNA.
Yeah, no, it jolted me right awake when I heard the music. And you know what? If you asked me before, what is the music for Home Alone? I think I really could have, if I sat there for 30 seconds, I could have hummed the tune for you.
Legitimately.
Yeah.
I'm down to just, like, dive right into the synopsis, if that works for you. Because I have a ton of notes. I really want to dissect this film.
I'm feeling like there's going to be a booby trap breakdown from you.
There is. I might have missed one, but I tried to get every single booby trap.
It was hard for me because my body was shutting down and I actually had a hard time watching all the booby traps. So I think I closed my eyes for parts of it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to see in pain.
I did too. Some of them were brutal. Like, they felt like multiple stories onto concrete on their back.
There was paint cans hitting them in the head from like 20 feet up in the air.
It was pretty brutal. I'm actually curious. I should have looked into this. I'm curious how they like pulled these stunts off. Because they looked very real. It really looked like they were getting hit in the face by stuff. I'm curious how they pulled it off.
I don't know, but if I had to pick one of those things to happen to me, weirdly enough, I think I would prefer staple gun to the crotch. It was like the most tame one.
Yeah, I mean, all the staples were only like an inch long, so.
I never thought I'd say that.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to dive right into the recap.
Sounds good.
Actually, holy crap.
What? What?
The first note I have is music immediately slaps you.
I think that we spend too much time together. Are we sharing a brain? I think we need to have separate hobbies.
That is wild. Wow. This is really funny.
What is it? March through December? That's what, 8 months of quarantine or so?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you spend all of your time together in a house with just you and your cat.
Oh, God. This is 9 months. Oh, God. Anyway, so the music immediately slaps you
in the face.
You get a quick opening credit, nothing to write home about.
I do have a note here. Okay,
write home about it then. Let's do it.
Zooms out. It shows their beautiful Chicago home.
Yeah,
they're a white light family. Enough said.
They are a white light family.
Enough said.
What was this dude's name that John Hughes?
Yeah,
he wrote this. It takes place in Chicago. He wrote Christmas Vacation. That takes place in Chicago.
I think it's his home. And New York. He's Chicago and New York in both of them.
And White Lights.
Yeah.
When is New York in Christmas Vacation?
Oh, sorry. I was thinking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in my head. Christmas Vacation. Was that too? Was it?
Oh my God. That's a John Hughes movie as well.
Yeah, I thought so.
Holy
that's
crap.
Why in my head. I know we've done a lot of John Hughes. He was the king of the 80s and 90s.
And loves Chicago.
And New York. Stand by that statement. Because Planes, Trains, and Automobiles opens in New York, too.
Yeah.
He's got a love of both cities.
I guess so. But anyway, quick opening credit scene.
White lights, family. I prefer colored lights, but it's fine. I'll accept it.
Chaos in the house. Running around. Lots of kids. Lots of yelling. Everybody is packing for vacation and saying, like, have you seen my...
Question.
Answer.
Did you on family vacations with cousins?
Yeah, sometimes.
When you went, did you all go to one house first to travel together?
No, we didn't all go to one house to pack our stuff to then go to another place. No.
That's what was confusing to me. Like, it's cool that they're all going to go on vacation together, but why are they all at Kevin's house to prepare?
I don't know. Suboptimal, really. Maybe they live nearby and they were like all going to go to the airport together. I don't know.
Or maybe they wanted to go to the Christmas show together.
Oh, maybe.
You know, because Kevin and Buzz have their Christmas, spoiler, they have their Christmas musical.
So, they're packing for vacation. Kevin is upstairs not packing. he's on his, like, mom's bed playing with this new recorder, his fancy cassette tape recorder that he got. And this introduces something really early that I loved. Kevin uses the tape recorder a lot in the movie, but they always showed him recording the things that he used later, which was wicked cool. So they had here a nice little bit of, like, you know, setting up later plot devices with a Plaza Hotel commercial. And he ends up recording it and then using it later, which is really, really cool. I like how they showed that.
How much money do you think the Plaza Hotel paid them to be featured in this movie?
Very interesting that you might ask this. I was going to bring this up later. I was talking to my coworker about this movie today.
Uh-huh.
And he told me that...
It's one big ad to the Plaza Hotel.
Well, he told me that I think his wife told him that...
Rumors. This is how rumors start.
The Donald Trump cameo in this was actually Donald Trump required that for them to film in the plaza that he had a part in the movie.
He owns a plaza?
I guess so.
Or I didn't owned, know that.
I don't know. So apparently that was like a requirement, was that he had to be in the movie. So maybe that was part of the payment. I don't know. Anyway, he's upstairs playing with his...
That's a savvy businessman who doesn't take any cash but wants a f***ing cameo. Oh, excuse my language.
Probably just gonna cut that.
I thought it was a good point. Still stand by it. Cut or not.
So Kevin's recording in the bedroom. His dad comes in to, like, I don't even know. He was looking for a charger or something. And he accidentally unplugs
He's
the
charging
alarm
his
clock.
Camera.
Yep. So setting up a similar disaster as last year or last movie. Kevin goes and records his uncle in the shower. Again, going to be used later. And then they have this Christmas pageant. My big question from this scene was, why was Buzz and Kevin in the same Christmas pageant? Buzz looks like he's like 25 years older than Kevin.
Probably through a church.
I thought it was at their school, but maybe it was through church.
We had, like, our town had a big Christmas pageant at the church, and, like, it was all the CCD kids through, like, youth group.
Buzz was too old for this, but Buzz
maybe
is...
Maybe he was held back a lot of grades.
That would make sense. This was before No Child Left Behind,
so... It was. We all know how great that legislation went for everyone.
Real political today.
Yeah, I'm just feeling salty today. I don't know.
So,
the Grinch.
They're doing this Christmas pageant. They're singing a song, and Buzz is tooling around with Kevin. He's, like, putting candles behind his ears during Kevin's big solo. And, like, the rudest group of adults in the entire world just, like, repeatedly laugh at this 10-year-old boy instead of being like, hey, don't do that, or, like, ignoring the very not funny thing that was happening.
I don't know. I just said I can really relate to this scene because I come from a big-eared family. Like, this could happen to us. Someone could put the lights behind our ears. And
your
it would
ears
be...
aren't big.
They stick out, okay?
Your ears are, like, very neatly tucked into your head. I'm looking at them right now.
No, it's a family trait. My brothers and I also have ears that pop out.
I don't know. But, yeah, so...
I pin them back at night so they stick close to my head.
That's not true.
After you go to sleep, I wear a tight headband. You just don't know.
It's like a Marvelous Miss Maisel where it shows all, like, her waking up early to, like,
I don't wake
get
up looking this good, okay?
Anyway. Christmas pageant. Buzz is being a jerk. And so Kevin turns around and, like, punches him and pushes him over. And all these people fall over. And his mom's super mad at Kevin, mostly. So we go to this scene in the house where they're, like, doing, like, a mock trial. And Buzz is, like, defending himself in front of the family and does a very, very fake apology to Kevin.
Dude, this freaked me out as a kid because I had, like, anxiety about having to plead my case with my parents. I was like, thank God my family's not a jury family. We just all go to our rooms immediately. It would be worse punishment for me to have to defend myself.
I probably learned a lot from this movie because I always fought my parents on everything. They'd be like, you're grounded for 2 weeks. And I'd be like, how about 3 days? And they'd be like, a week. And
Jesus.
So they have the trial. Buzz does this really fake apology to Kevin, and Kevin's like, well, screw you. I'm not going to apologize. So he ends up having to go sleep on the third floor. And his mom comes up and is like, come on. Is this how you want to, like, kick off the holidays, basically? And Kevin says, I'm not going to apologize to Buzz. I would rather kiss a toilet seat. I kind of side with Kevin there. I probably would do the same.
Go kiss our toilet right now. Give
well,
me
I'm
five
not
bucks.
Mad at you. So
next time you're mad at me, I'm going to go tell you to kiss a toilet seat.
All right. Oh, And Kevin ends up saying, I'd rather go on vacation alone. And his mom says, well, you got your wish last year. Maybe you'll get it again this year.
Dun, dun, dun.
Fast forward to everybody sleeping in the house, and it's really windy outside, and a newspaper blows to the door that says, wet bandits escape. So that's how we know who the antagonists of this film are going to be. Everybody's getting ready to leave. Well, they get woken up because their alarm clock didn't go off. So it's the same scene from the first movie. They're all scrambling to go. The mom thinks that she left Kevin behind, but he ends up being in the front seat.
Fake out.
It was a fun fake out. I liked that fake out.
Where's Kevin? Right here. Grabs his ticket.
They get to the airport. Kevin's like, Dad, I need batteries. My tape recorder thing. He grabs his dad's bag, and then they all start running through the airport because they are about to be late. Kevin does one of the most stupid things I've ever seen. He just stops, like, they are all sprinting through the airport, and he stops dead in his tracks to try and put some AA batteries in with gloves on.
Dude, I feel like that's such a kid thing, though. If you were playing Game Boy while running through the airport and your batteries died, you would 100% stop on the way there to put the batteries in your Game Boy.
Okay, that's fair.
You would definitely do
Kevin
that.
Didn't do something that stupid, I agree. He ends up following...
Defense.
Good trial. That was a good buzz.
I've been practicing my whole life.
So Kevin ends up following the wrong dad, and he runs to the other gate, bumps into the woman, or I guess the fake dad bumps into the woman at the counter, and she drops all of the tickets.
No, Kevin does.
Oh, he runs into her?
Because he's chasing her, and she drops all the boarding passes, and his gets lost in the shuffle.
So she doesn't realize that that's not the plane he's supposed to be on. Two weird things about this. One, there's no way in hell that a plane during the holidays going from Chicago to New York would have any empty seats. So they would have caught that anyway. Mm-hmm. Also, this just couldn't happen now because of e-tickets. This literally couldn't happen.
They would have scanned everybody in, right?
Yeah. So Kevin gets on the plane and does a very cursory look for his family, doesn't find them, and does a great shrug. Macaulay Culkin is a fantastic facial expression actor, and this was top 10, like, wonderful.
Macaulay Culkin might be the best actor of all time.
He's so good.
He's so f***ing phenomenal. Oh my god, my language is out of control. Add a hot chocolate and a cookie, and I'm just like rearing to go right now. Oh my god.
You gotta sign you up for like kickboxing or something. Okay, so Kevin is conveniently sitting next to a French guy, so he ends up asking him a question and getting bored because he can't understand him. So he puts headphones on right as they're announcing they're going to
A flight to New York. Temperature at destination, a crisp 27 degrees. I would be a terrible flight attendant.
You're not allowed to drink hot chocolate anymore.
I didn't even want it.
She's currently saying this into her hot chocolate like a microphone. It's pretty great. So they land in New York. He gets off and he's like, what's going on? At the same time, his family lands in
rainy
Florida
Miami.
And realize that Kevin's not there. They say, give this to Kevin. Give this to Kevin. Kevin's not here. Kevin's not here. I liked that scene.
Kevin!
And he is, in fact, lost in New York.
The title of this movie is such a spoiler.
So Kevin realizes his family's in Florida and he's in New York. And it cuts to this really fun New York montage of him just, like, going around doing stuff. He, like, gets a cab to the city and just, like,
all the touristy has a great time. All the landmarks, like Statue of Liberty, the World Trade Center, the Two Towers.
I did have a problem with that.
Twin Towers, not Two Towers. This is not Lord of the Rings.
Not Lord of the Rings. I had a problem with that. He was on this, like, catwalk on the top of the Twin Towers that was surrounded by barbed wire. Like, how did he get up there?
Well, the whole thing is he gets himself into situations that he's not supposed to be.
That one was extreme.
My favorite thing is when he lands and the flight attendant is like, you're in New York City. He whispers to himself, like, I'm going to be fine. That was so real. I whisper that to myself, like, at least 6 times a day.
So at the end of this montage, we see the Wet Bandits. They are in New York. They just escaped prison during a prison riot, I guess. And
Harry and Marv.
Harry and Marv. And Marv, who was Daniel Stern, who we saw before, says he has a new nickname for them, the Sticky Bandits. But Kevin is going to the Plaza Hotel. And we also get introduced to the Pigeon Lady.
Pigeons are so freaking gross.
I mean, pigeons are just doves.
Yeah, but have you seen, I know you've seen, a New York City pigeon?
New York City pigeons are wild. They have, like, missing toes and stuff. Dude, they're just, the one, like,
it
had a club,
it was just no toes. It was just a stub, and it was eating, like...
French fries.
Garbage. actual garbage off the street. They're dirty. They smell. They poop on everything.
So, Kevin gets to the Plaza Hotel. We have a cameo of Donald Trump. And... Kevin calls in to make a reservation using his tape recording. Super exciting, Tim Curry answers the phone. I love this man.
No, the front desk lady answers the phone. Excuse me,
the front desk answers the phone, but we see Tim Curry. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm Peter McAllister, the father.
Yeah. It's so good. He records himself and, like, plays it and, like, voice alters it. It's really good.
I'm Peter McAllister, the father.
So he checks in. And so then we just get a scene of him enjoying the hotel. He goes up to his room. It's absolutely nuts. He tips the, like, concierge guy, bellhop, yeah, with gum, which was really funny. And then he goes down to the pool, and this was adorable. He goes over to, like, the old people in the hot tub, and he goes, "Would it bother anyone if I worked on my cannonballs?"
Oh.
Super cute. And then he goes back to his room, and he's watching TV. And this is one of the great callbacks to the original film. He's watching Angels with Even Filthier Souls, which was a made-up sequel to the made-up movie in the first Home Alone, Angels with Filthy Souls.
I did not know that, because I haven't seen the first movie, really.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I always kind of imagined, because I looked this up, but I always imagined it was the same movie, just playing twice, and it was a different scene, but it is a... sequel. In-universe sequel to that first movie, which is wonderful.
That's some Quentin Tarantino shit right there for you.
Yeah. And so Tim Curry comes up as housekeeping, but he's kind of skeptical. He's like, I feel like this kid is up to no good.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up, like, sneaking into the bathroom where Kevin, realizing he might get busted, sets up a fake adult in the room using his inflatable clown that mm-hmm. his parents got him and using the recording of his uncle from earlier.
Yeah, his uncle says, "Get out of here, you nosy little pervert, or I'm going to slap you silly."
And Tim Curry sprints out of the room, terrified. So, next morning, Kevin calls a limo. I guess he got a limo courtesy from the hotel from Tim Curry peeping on his fake dad.
I feel bad saying this, but if someone else wanted to walk in on me in the shower and get me a limo for the day, I, like, might be fine with it.
And a pizza.
The pizza was really the, the pizza sealed was, the deal for yeah. me. He didn't see anything. He just walked in the shower, you know?
Exactly. And so he's in the limo. He asks his limo driver, "Do you know any good toy stores?" So he goes to Duncan's Toy Chest. And at the same time, we're flashing over to Marvin Harry, and they are hatching their plan to rob a toy store, mm-hmm. which ends up being the same toy store, Duncan's Toy Chest. So Kevin goes in, he's spending some money, he's buying some stuff. And as he's checking out, the nice old man at the counter tells him that all the money the store makes, he's going to donate to the hospital, the children's hospital Saint down Anne's. The road. And so Kevin, being a great kid, donates some money to the store, and he says, "I'm probably going to waste it on something that would rot my teeth or my mind." Just a great little cute line.
That's definitely something he's heard from his parents. He's spitting back out.
Oh, for sure. And this was somebody that we've seen all as well. The man that we are seeing in this scene is E.F. Duncan, the owner of Duncan's Toy Chest, and he is played by Eddie Bracken, who was in Rookie of the Year. So Kevin donates some money to the toy store to give to the hospital, and so Mr. Duncan says, "Take something from the tree," and this is when he gives him the turtle dove ornaments, which come back later in the film. But as he's leaving, the bandits find him. I guess they were probably, like, scoping out the place or something.
Casing the joint is the word that... the lingo.
Thank you.
You're in the know.
Mm-hmm. And so Kevin screams and runs away. As he's running, he buys, like, a necklace from the street vendors in New York and rips it open to, like, sprinkle marbles all over the sidewalk to make the bandits trip. And that's how he gets away.
Beads.
He goes back to the plaza, and Tim Curry had tried to run their card and realized that it was reported stolen. So Tim Curry confronts Kevin, takes the card away from him, calls him a thief, and Kevin runs to try and get away from the situation. He runs back to the room to pack his stuff and does another great callback using the Angels with Even Filthier Souls movie to scare all of the hotel staff into thinking that somebody's about to shoot them with a Tommy gun.
The most iconic scene in the whole movie.
Probably. In the whole movie.
Yeah.
Just wonderful.
Get on your knees and tell me you love me.
Yep.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
And a Happy New Year. Kevin leaves the hotel and ends up jumping right into the bandits' hands. So they're, like, kidnapping him, and as they're walking, Marv ends up just telling the whole
plot.
He's like, we're gonna rob the toy store, and blah, blah, blah.
Idiot. You need a smart henchman if you're gonna be a criminal. Harry chose wrong with Marv.
Really did. Including that they do intend to kill him.
Yeah, they said, you're gonna swim with the fishes, you're gonna visit the Undertaker, I have my gun, you're gonna be on ice. They really hammered home that they're planning on
murdering a child. And while this is happening, Kevin is actually recording the whole thing.
That camcorder saved his life.
He, again, ends up getting away and runs to his uncle's apartment in New York.
Smart kid.
Unfortunately, it's being renovated.
They're not home.
So now Kevin has nowhere to go. We get this, like, montage of New York is scary at night, basically. And it ends with
none of those characters would be on the Upper East Side at night. Let's be real. Okay. Yeah.
Like maybe in the 90s. Who knows?
True.
It ends with him in the park with the pigeon lady. He ends up not getting scared of her and they become friends. And she brings him to the orchestra in like the attic part of it. And they like have this bonding scene.
Iconic scene of them sneaking into the orchestra at night.
Yeah. And I'm glossing over this one because I do want to kind of talk about this one.
Kevin's wise beyond his years.
And it ends up with Kevin kind of like getting motivated to do a good deed. And so he says, you can mess with a lot of things, but you can't mess with kids on Christmas. And we get this like badass like Christmas jingle jam.
It was. It got me hype. It was like, you know when there's football close to the holiday season and they have like the...
They use a lot of the bells.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what that reminded me of.
Yeah, it was like a little bit Carol the Bellsy, but not all the way. It was interesting. It
made me want to get out and tackle someone, you know?
Yep. And so now it's booby trap time. Kevin is setting up all the booby traps at his uncle's house, at the apartment.
Yeah, let's use his multi-million-dollar home and destroy it.
So Kevin's booby trapping the place, and as that's happening, his family arrives in New York at the plaza.
They're chasing him because they know that the credit card was used in New York, so they know Kevin has to be in New York.
Yep. Fast forward to like midnight or 10 or whatever when the toy store closes and the bandits hit out in the store and they're getting out of their hiding place to like break into the cash register and all that. Kevin, knowing that this was going to happen, is waiting there with his camera and takes a picture of them and then throws a brick through the window with a note on it for Mr. Duncan to get the cops to come, sets off the alarm, and also try to get the bandits to chase him.
Mm-hmm. Successfully.
And what's kind of wild, up until right before the booby trapping starts, that was the first half of the film. And then this is the rest of the half of the film. The first half of this film was jam-packed, and then the second half took a slower pace, which I kind of appreciated.
Yeah.
It really, like, was a wild first half of the movie.
That felt like the first 3/4 of the movie, though.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like the first half at all.
Because this second half, like, slowed down so much, but it was kind of a nice...
But not a lot really happens in the second half of it, to be honest.
So this is what happens. They have the booby trap scene. He lures them to the apartment, and I'll walk you through each of the booby traps. So they get injured a whole lot.
Yeah, very painful.
He lures them out of the house, and his plan is to bring them to the park. He calls the cops and says, come to the park. You know, the people that broke into Duncan's toy store are going to be there. Look for the fireworks. As he's running away, he slips on some ice. The bandits get him and are about to murder him. But the pigeon lady saves Kevin.
By throwing birdseed on the sticky bandits who are sticky.
Are indeed sticky.
And the birds, like, attack them, basically.
They get arrested. Kevin runs away and his mom asks the cop for help and they say, well, where would he go? And she says, I don't know, he's a kid. And then she ends up saying,
oh, yeah, because Kevin's mom's just like wandering New York looking for Kevin aimlessly. And she runs into separate cops who are not arresting the sticky bandits.
Yep. And that's when she realizes Kevin loves Christmas trees. He's going to be at Rockefeller Center. Kevin was at Rockefeller Center.
Convenient.
And he's wishing to be home with his family and all that stuff. They get reunited. They both say sorry. It was a nice reunion scene.
I would agree. Maybe miss my mom.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice. And then they wake up. It's Christmas Day. They're in the Plaza Hotel. And there's just an absolutely boco amount of presents in their suite.
Courtesy of Mr. Duncan.
Buzz is like, hey, hold on. You know, Kevin should open the first present because it's his fault that we're here, basically. Mm-hmm. But in a nice way, kind of nice way. But then he doesn't even let him open the first present. He's like, okay, everybody dig in. But Kevin never opened the present. My mom would have been very upset at that. She would have been like, no, we have to go youngest to oldest. Everybody gets the same structure. Number of presents.
I feel like your mom would divide it up by present size, too. People get equal amounts of big boxes and small boxes.
Yeah, right. You know? And then Kevin ends up sneaking off. And it's like, dear God, these parents are awful. He not only leaves the room.
Found him.
Yeah. He doesn't just leave the room. He wanders all the way to Central Park. And I would have literally had him on a leash.
Bojack.
Like, dear God.
He just strolls right out. This dude is going to leave for college and never come back home.
Never. And they wouldn't even know.
They'd be like, oh, Kevin graduated high school?
Oh, my God. But yeah, he meets up with the pigeon lady, gives her the turtle dove and says, now we're friends forever. Ah. And then the movie ends with Rob Schneider, who was one of the bellhop from the movie, coming up to the room and gives the McAllisters their Kevin's bill from when he was at the hotel, which was weird to me because they comped this huge suite. Why did they charge him for the room service?
Because Kevin got tableside sundaes made. Okay, that's why he got his bill charged for that.
But this was probably the most unrealistic part of the movie for me, but maybe this is just 30 years of inflation. He got like everything you could possibly order in room service, and it only ended up being $967.
For real, dude. Like, because room service is so expensive, too.
I know.
They upcharge that shit so much.
If I guessed, if you had like given me that receipt and you said like, how much do you think this would be? I'd be like $6,000. And I would think I would be lowballing you.
And he ate a lot of candy.
He ate a lot of candy, which I was proud of him for.
Oh, God, I made my stomach hurt.
But yeah, that was most of Home Alone, Lost in New York. I do have some stuff that we'll like do a little bit of a deeper dive into, but that's the general plot summary.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I think the first thing that just like slapped me in the face, like I said, that first half of the movie was so jam-packed. It was unreal. It was literally the first hour of the movie was everything up until he goes to his uncle's house for the first time. And then everything after that is the second hour of the movie. I mean, like, holy crap. The first hour of this film is a complete whirlwind. It was almost, mm-hmm. like, tiring to watch. And then they give you a breather and slow it down and start to, like,
the conflict have a plot. Really, like, picks up.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that, because if they had kept that pace, I would not have enjoyed this movie at all.
You know what, though? It felt like spending a day in New York City, though.
Yeah.
Like, you go and you're running around and doing all these things and running all over the city. Like, that's kind of how it is when you visit New York. Or if when we live there, when me and family come, you know, mm-hmm. you're just like, go, go, go all day. So I actually kind of liked that.
I wonder if that was intentional. Because now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But I don't know if that was, like, an intentional thing by the movie maker.
I don't know. It felt pretty realistic to me.
Yeah. Like I said, that was the first thing I just wanted to mention is like, whew, it was nice to get a breather. It was nice to slow down and like you said, let the conflict develop a little bit and have a real plot instead of just like flashes of action.
Well, you think the conflict would be that there is a minor child alone in New York and his parents are like, huh, at least we don't lose the luggage, you know? But in actuality, the conflict is that two recently runaway inmates decided to murder a 10-year-old. So,
yeah,
you know, they really like upped the ante. It was already high.
Mm-hmm.
They made it even higher stakes, to be
really,
honest.
Really, really upped the ante.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, anything that you want to like chat through, like call out that I might have missed?
Yeah, there was one extremely unrealistic scene that was really hard for me to reconcile, to be honest. And
this is going to be a joke, isn't it?
I'm actually pretty serious about this. It's really frustrated me in the moment. I was like, no freaking way would this ever happen. Christmas Eve in New York City at a freaking toy store. and Kevin and Mr. Duncan are able to have a 10-minute conversation at the register with no one else in line.
That's a good point.
Or hustling them to get going. No way would that ever, ever happen. There'd be like 50 people in line. You'd be waiting an hour to pay.
People would be honking their horns outside on the street to make him hurry up.
For real. The second Kevin went to like have a conversation or ask about anything, people would be like sighing and like trying to get up closer to him, putting things on the counter next to him. You know what I mean?
Somebody would have literally just picked him up and moved him at some point.
I know. No way would that ever happen.
That actually is a great point. How in the world were his mom and him the only people at Rockefeller Center on Christmas Eve?
No way.
It doesn't matter what time. It could have been 4 a.m. and it would have still been packed.
That is the busiest part of Manhattan. That is especially around the Christmas time. I had to go through Rockefeller Center station and transfer. Mm-hmm. At my first job in the city, and from right before Thanksgiving all the way through New Year's, it was the worst part of my day.
Yeah.
You couldn't move.
No, you're completely right. We only went there one time. It was fun, but boy, was it hectic.
The most noble thing I ever have done in my entire life was going up out of the subway station from Rockefeller Center before Christmas to buy your stepmom chocolate for Christmas. Because the store is right outside Rockefeller Center. And I feel like I almost lost my life 4 times. Trying to get chocolate.
Remember I ran all the way to the Nintendo store to buy my brother the Nintendo Switch Christmas week?
You should get a gold medal for that.
I called the store and they had like 3 left and I literally sprinted from my apartment. Not all the way there because I took the subway a little bit, but like sprinted all the way to the Nintendo store to get it.
Honestly, and from our apartment, you had to transfer a lot. Like it wasn't an easy spot to get to Rockefeller Center.
It took me like 40 minutes at least to get there. It was so nerve-wracking. I thought they were going to sell out.
I don't know how they didn't because I don't hold it for you either. So the Rockefeller Center piece being empty never happens. And also the cash register, unrealistic.
And I know that those were in like a little ways jokey, but I think that's probably like one of my bigger problems with the movie is like a lot of stuff was like watching as an adult was like kind of obviously manufactured. Like not only just like little things like that where it's like that's not how the world works, but also just like, if Kevin is smart enough to booby trap this whole house and then call the cops, he's also smart enough to just like call the cops. Like, why didn't he just call the cops and say like, hey, these people are robbing the toy store. Be there at 10 o'clock and you'll catch them.
It was at midnight for one.
Midnight, yeah.
And for two, I think it's because Kevin's a little serial killer. I'm not kidding. He was out to kill. This was fun and games for him. He was like, toying with his food.
I have to torture them before they go to jail so that they know.
Dude, it was evil. It was evil.
That's fair. We were saying this in the intro. It was definitely a little bit of a darker movie than I remembered.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were trying to kill him, for one.
Yeah.
And two, like, there was a million lawsuits in this movie.
Oh, boy.
A million lawsuits.
Do you want me to quickly run through the booby traps? It feels like this might be a good time for it.
Oof, yeah. Let's do it. I have like 3 pages on the booby traps.
So it starts with the seesaw outside the window at Duncan's toy chest. He sets up like a board for them to jump on, which ends up kind of hurting them both. But Harry is
launched into the air and lands on a car.
Yeah, he takes the brunt of it. Then he lures them back to the house, the apartment, and just chucks bricks off the roof at them over and over again. This was meant for both of them, but it really only hit Marv.
Marv got hit 4 times in the head.
In the face.
And he was like 3 stories up launching these bricks at them. He would have been dead.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dead on the first hit.
It was brutal.
No blood. So unrealistic.
Well, I mean, I think that was an artistic decision.
But still, though, like, I mean, I'm just concerned kids are going to think they can chuck bricks at someone from the 3rd floor.
I did kind of, like, it feels a little irresponsible. Like, there's no repercussions for him just torturing 2 humans.
Premeditated murder. I stand by that
statement.
Yeah,
he was probably just like frustrated the whole time, but like, how didn't they die? I like explicitly said, like,
he put gasoline in the toilet and had the guy light himself on fire.
And then actually just electrocutes somebody.
Oh, yeah. That was bad too.
So, yeah, he sets up the doorknob to the house with like a fake doorknob on a rope. And then when you pull it, it shoots a staple gun. This one was probably the stupidest of all of the booby traps because he had to pull like 30 feet of rope. Like, at what point do you be like, hey, I'm gonna not pull this rope anymore?
It was Marv, so he was, you know, if it was gonna work on anyone, it was gonna be Marv. But yeah, he gets stapled in the crotch and the butt and the nose.
In the nose. Then the next one is Harry getting injured. He goes to climb the fire escape ladder, and it has soap on the bottom, so he slips off onto his back. Then Marv kicks the door open, and there's no floor because they're renovating it, and he just falls directly into the basement, which was horrifying.
Dude, this is actually the one that would be a lawsuit, and Marv would win.
Oh, yeah, he definitely would win.
You can't. You can't do that. There has to be, like, caution tape and signs, and you can't have, like, an open hole in that.
Yep.
Even if you're being robbed. This is in one of my law classes I took. Not actual law, but like a joke law class, you know? But this one burglar sued the homeowner because they were redoing their stairs to their basement, and the burglar broke in and he fell on the stairs and broke his leg.
I actually learned that exact case as well in my joke law class in high school.
Yeah, well, Marv, he's going to be a legal study one day because he can't do that.
Can't do that. The next one was Harry's at the back door. He goes and kicks it open, which unzips a tool bag that's hanging up above him, and it drops all the wrenches on his head.
Dead. Again, dead.
That one wouldn't have killed him. It would have hurt real bad.
It could.
I mean, it could, but unlikely.
A wrench to the temple. Those were heavy metal tools.
They were big. Next one is Marv in the basement. He slips on a soapy floor and falls into a paint shelf.
The paint cans fall on him.
Yep.
Also potentially dead.
And then he goes to clean himself off at the sink, and when he touches the metal, Kevin has literally wired it up to a portable generator and electrocutes him so much that he turns into a skeleton? I know it was for comedic effect, but good lord.
My body is, like, in pain right now.
The next one is Harry gets his head lit on fire when he pulls the cord of a light switch, and it pulls, like, a torch, and it literally lights his head on fire. And so then he goes to put his head out by doing a handstand into the toilet. Really impressive.
Very graceful. Well,
and Kevin filled that toilet with a flammable liquid and it explodes.
His head explodes. He dips his lit up head into a flammable toilet bowl and it explodes.
Yep. Next one is Marv tries to climb this rope to get out of the basement, and a concrete bag weighing 100 pounds falls and hits him directly on the face. This is the one outside of the electrocution that without a doubt would have killed him. I did a little bit of math. If he was three-story different, it would have been moving at 52 meters per second. But if it was four stories, because he was in the basement, so I think it would have been four stories, it was moving at 60 meters per second when it hit him.
Did you use the gravity?
Yes.
9.8 meters?
Yes.
I'm happy that you used accurate numbers there.
I meant to continue doing the math, but then I went to bed to see how much force that would have had being in a 100-pound concrete bag. But there's no way you would be dead. You would 100% be dead.
Yeah.
It would have broke his neck.
It would have been a much shorter montage if they... like, Harry never would have gotten up off the car from the seesaw.
Yeah.
After falling through the roof. He would just be having to lie there waiting for an ambulance. And then Marv would be dead by the bricks.
Yep.
He could avoid all this damage to this beautiful multi-million dollar home.
Because they would have just been dead.
Exactly. Yep.
So the next one is Harry is trying to climb up a wooden ladder after Kevin. But Kevin had sawed the, like, rungs to be almost broken so that a heavy person climbing up it would snap it, which happens. So Harry falls off the ladder. Then from here on out, every single prank, booby trap, torture method, this is basically like a child sequel to Saw, or prequel to Saw, I'm realizing.
It's a murder house. It's a murder house.
In the first movie, Kevin had the paint cans on like the banister, and when they walked up the stairs, he threw it at them and it smacked them in the face. He sets it up, and Harry's like, oh no, the paint cans are coming. So they fake that they get hit by them, but then he actually has more paint cans and they get hit by that. Or I guess it's a lead pipe.
I said it's a cannon, but I think lead pipe is more accurate.
Yeah, it's like a gigantic lead pipe, and it hits them square in the face. Again, they would just be dead. And to top it all off, it hits them so hard, it launches them off the stairs, and they fall all the way through that hole in the ground into the basement again. And then, as they are laying there on the ground in agony, he drops the lead pipe down the stairs and lands on their stomachs. Yikes. They both end up being able to make it back into the house. I would have just left at this point, but sure. They
go back. Drag me off. You probably actually have to scrape me off the floor.
I would have been calling 911 myself and been like, arrest me, get me away from this maniac. Jail is better than this.
Kevin should be in jail.
So they make it back into the house. They go to the attic. When they open the door, it pulls a tool chest down the stairs, and that one visibly breaks both of their noses, which was exciting.
No blood. Still no blood.
Still no blood. They then follow Kevin up onto the roof. They start to climb down the rope, but it was soaked in kerosene. And as they're climbing it, he literally lights it on fire, which makes them fall off the rope to the ground. And somehow that also pulls down this varnish that was hanging on the roof, and they get soaked. Well, first they have these cans of, like, big paint cans of varnish fall three stories and land on them, and also soaks them in varnish. And then the bird seed wraps it up.
Too much. My body is, like, in pain thinking about this. My face hurts. My back hurts.
It was extreme.
It like, oof. Yeah. I was just saying, there was zero blood.
Yep.
They didn't even really get hurt.
No.
And they should be dead multiple times. Like, they don't even have 9 lives left.
No.
Like, if they were a cat, they'd still be dead. I mean, yeah, I guess it was funny. It was a bit much for me. And also, I don't know, maybe it's a little irresponsible.
Yeah. So I think we're kind of going into this, but I'd love, if you're cool with it, to go into, like, our pluses and minuses for the film.
Sure.
Because that's one of my big ones. Now that I'm watching it, I'm like, whoa. If I, like, had a 5-year-old at home, I'd be like, I don't know if I want to watch this with them, because
they're going to murder me.
Yeah, they'll think it's, like, funny to put, like, ball bearings at the top of the stairs, so when I walk to go pee at night, I, like, fall down them and die.
Or, like, we didn't give them dessert or something after dinner, or we don't have pizza, and, like, I don't know, all of a sudden I'm getting paint cans hurled at me.
Yeah, like, I gotta ask my mom about this, but, like, did she ever, like, fear for her life? Did she ever be like, maybe I shouldn't watch this with my kids? Because, like, this one's, like, a little personal pet peeve of mine, but, like, growing up, I played a lot of video games, and mm-hmm. in the news was always, like, school shootings are caused by video games. No. If anything is going to make you violent, it's definitely this stuff, because this was explicitly a little kid performing torture acts on adults.
Torture acts.
Like, it was human-on-human violence. It wasn't, like, Space Marine shooting aliens. It was little kid torturing adults.
Yeah,
and being rewarded for it.
I don't buy the self-defense anymore for this. Like, yeah, maybe at first, but not anymore. And the thing that's crazy, too, is he can't even plead and say, like, oh, it was in the moment. I just got lucky. There's renovations. Because yeah. He had a freaking poster that said Operation Ho Ho Ho, where he planned out all the torture.
Yeah.
It's funny, too, because the lady with all the pigeons, she's like, oh, yeah, you know, a good deed will...
Counts extra.
Counts extra, but also it overrides a bad deed. So because Kevin's concerned about stealing the credit card and getting in trouble. And so she's like, yeah, do a good deed. So he's like, okay, cool. I'll stop the... robbery of the toy store that's going to go to the children's hospital. But by stopping it, he does an even worse deed by trying to kill people.
Extremely worse.
You know?
Yeah, so...
credit card, like, his dad's going to pay the bill, and, like, he didn't hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. It was his dad's card. It wasn't like he, you know, robbed an innocent family that he doesn't know. Really not the worst deed. He had no other option, one could say, because he was just alone in New York City. He did have an option to not attempt to kill people, though.
Could have just called the police. So what I said was, torture scene is kind of long. As a kid, I loved those, but now I kind of preferred the exposition. Also, I think this movie required a lot of willing suspension of disbelief. Like, the house directly next to the torture house, it was connected, they shared a wall, and their lights were on. They probably would have heard this.
Yeah, but you've lived in New York. We heard some shit through the walls. No one did anything.
Nothing like this, though. I don't know. There was just, like, a good amount of stuff that required, like, a big suspension of disbelief that, as an adult, I was just like, I don't know if I want to willfully suspend this. And it wasn't just Kevin being smart. It was, like, a lot of other stuff that kind of...
Oh, I love the Kevin being smart scenes.
I didn't mind those, to be clear.
Macaulay Culkin did a wonderful job. He's very smart. And very mischievous, but he's also very charming. So he pulls it off. It's a very fine line,
mm-hmm.
I think.
They needed this specific actor. He did really, really, really mm-hmm. well.
He can really pull off the cute and charming, but also kind of, like, mischievous. And he can play the adults and be like, oh, who would let a kid rent a hotel room by themselves? That would never happen, you know? And he pulls it off so well.
And, like, wise beyond your years. Mm-hmm. But also still a kid, like, he still makes mistakes and stuff. It was a very good balance.
That being said, despite the murder, he comes across as very genuine. Like, the scene where he tries to give Mr. Duncan $20 for the kids with the sick children at the hospital.
Yeah.
It doesn't come off as disingenuous.
And when he was talking to the pigeon lady, mm-hmm. he was, like, keeping good eye contact. He was being a very active listener. Like, as a kid acting that, I was pretty impressed with his ability to do those scenes.
No, he killed it. He came off very sincere.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't feel hokey either, because that scene could easily feel hokey.
Yeah.
You know?
And I actually really liked that scene as the motivation for him to, like, to set up the conflict and have him, like, do his thing, right? I liked the idea of, like, a good deed, you know, counts extra on Christmas and stuff. And for him to be like, oh, I want to do good deeds. I thought it was a cool idea. I don't think the good deeds he did were good deeds, but it was a fun idea.
That he got guidance from the woman with the pigeons?
Yeah.
What else did you like about the movie?
The tape recorder was a wicked fun little plot device. Mm-hmm. I really like how they used it. It was brilliant. As we've been saying, Macaulay Culkin is tremendous. Oh my God. Really good actor. Like, the fact that he was only like 10-ish when this came out was insane. I kind of hinted at this one and when I opened this segment by singing. But this movie uses leitmotif out the wazoo.
Your favorite.
And they do it. He does it really well. Obviously, John Williams is just like tremendously talented and incredible. But the way he like snuck in that Somewhere in My Memory song over and over again, kind of like Kevin's theme, he would just play it for like a measure. It would just be like four little notes of it, and then he would get back to it. But it was really great. It was nice. It roots you in the movie. Damn, he's great. And then one little scene that I really loved. There was this really good juxtaposition scene where Kevin gets to the hotel and he goes into his room and immediately cuts to his family rolling up to the like Dolphin Shoals Motel or whatever it was. And it was pouring rain. It was hilarious. I guess like what I liked about this movie, it was really well directed, it was really well written, and it was really well acted.
Yep.
It was a professional film.
Yes.
Like, way more professional than it has any business being, since it was, like, a kid's movie, you know? Like, it would be easy to phone this in, but they didn't, and I think that's why it was so successful, is because parents could watch it and be like, hey, this is a movie.
Especially considering it's a sequel that made a lot of money, right?
Oh, my God,
I feel like
yeah.
you can, people really phone in sequels, and they put in half the effort, and they know they're going to get a ton of money from it anyway. And I don't feel like they were riding off of Home Alone 1 being a success.
No, they called back to it a couple of times, but it was his own movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually set it up where it made you think that they were going to do something, and then they didn't do that.
Oh, when Kevin was actually in the car on the way to the airport?
Yeah, they had like a couple of those, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, it was a plot, its own plot device that they acknowledged in the film with Harry and Marv, being like, this happened in the first movie, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. It was not lazy. It was well done and pretty damn professional, really well acted. So yeah, that's a lot of my positives. I also want to call out Daniel Stern, who played Marv. I thought his performance was really, really good.
Oh, he's so funny.
He's wicked funny.
He's so funny. I thought both him and Harry, Joe Pesci, did a great job.
Yeah.
I wonder if they used stunt doubles for those scenes. They had to have, right?
Some of them, you could tell, like, the scene where Harry was doing his handstand into the toilet was definitely a stunt double. A lot of the ones where they were falling onto their back and stuff were stunt doubles, but then a lot of them, they were also doing a lot of the movements. I think they did a good amount of, like, their own pre-stunt stuff,
which made it better. I couldn't really tell too much. Like, I was fully, like, enraptured in those scenes, you know?
They didn't have to rely on a ton of cuts to make those action scenes work, which I think is what made them better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It felt very natural flow.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they weren't hiding anything in the cuts is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay, things I liked?
Yeah.
So Macaulay Culkin killed it. Mm-hmm. This wouldn't be Home Alone without Macaulay Culkin. I don't think anyone else could have played his role.
It would have been really hard. It would have been really, really hard. He was great.
I would also say I loved the montage of, like, Kevin in New York as a kid, mm-hmm. like, enjoying vacation. I thought it was really realistic for what a kid would actually do.
Yeah.
Like, all the candy, the tableside sundae that was getting made for him.
Yeah.
Watching movies late in a big bed by himself, going to the toy store. He drinks Coke out of a champagne flute at one point.
Oh, in the limo. That was yeah. so good. That was really good.
I just thought it was phenomenal. And I also like them kind of showcasing the city and, you know, being a kid trying to go to the top of the observatory of all these tall buildings.
Like, yeah.
It felt really realistic and charming to me.
I agree. Yeah.
And it made me jealous as a kid. And I'm still jealous as an adult.
That's why I said I liked the opening much more than the tortures bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were fun. And it was cute. And it was nostalgic. It was a lot of great stuff.
I would also say I loved all of the hotel staff at the Plaza. Like Tim Curry as the concierge, and then Cedric, played by Rob Schneider, who was the bellhop, and then the woman who worked the front desk.
Yep. I think her name was Hester.
Hester. They were just so wonderful, and they were just great comic relief.
Yeah.
And I just love the idea that this staff was so bothered by this kid. And undermine him and prove he was somehow, like, malicious or, like, not supposed to be there. It just gave me, like, peak burnt out customer service staff who, like, kind of are in their routine and they see something popping out and they just need to get to the bottom of it. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Or, like, not even burnt out, but just, like, bored. Bored staff that are just, like, looking for something to occupy themselves with, you know? Yeah. And I loved it. I thought they were so funny.
They had one of my favorite jokes in the whole movie. When they're getting reamed out by the McAllisters when they show up at the hotel, they say, "What kind of idiots do you have working here?" And he says, "The finest in New York." Oh, the delivery, everything. Really great.
Also, the scene of their reaction when the fake movie is playing and they think that they're getting, like, shaken down by a mobster, essentially, like them actually getting on their knees and acting scared. Like, it was just so good.
Yep.
I also love the scene of Tim Curry. There's, like, a scene of the Grinch smiling, and it cuts to Tim Curry smiling when he realizes that Kevin's credit card is stolen.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
He also had this little baby lip quiver after his mom, Kevin's mom, slaps him, which was really great. His performance was really good for just, like, a quick cameo, basically.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was good. It was so good. But yeah, I just love the hotel staff. And they were funny to me then, and they're still very funny to me now.
Oh, yeah. And this was, we've talked about this a few times in the, like, when we've watched kids' movies, about, like, putting in funny stuff more for the adults than the kids, or making it accessible for the adults. This was a great way of doing accessible adult humor that wasn't, like, innuendo or something.
Yes. And also, I think it was still funny for the kids, too.
Yep. It was a hard balance, and they definitely struck it. It was, like you said, it was hilarious when I was a kid, and it was hilarious now. Mm-hmm. The, "I love you."
Yeah.
We used to say that as a kid. We would, like, quote that back and forth because it was so funny, and it was still wicked funny now.
One of the best parts of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing that I really loved is just the portrayal of, like, family. Like, having a big, bustling family with all your cousins together. And I think they really captured the annoyance of being around all of your family at the same time and the hecticness, but also at the end, like, just the bond.
Yeah.
The family bond. I just liked that a lot. And I didn't really have a huge family that had get-togethers like that necessarily. I wasn't, like, hanging out with all my cousins at the same time. If I did, it was rare. It was once or twice a year. And I don't know. It was just awesome. I remember always wanting that.
And I did do that, and it made me nostalgic for it. Mm-hmm. They captured it great.
Loved it. So those are the best parts of the movie, including some of the things you mentioned, like the music and everything like that. I thought it was a very nostalgic movie.
Yeah.
It made me feel very nostalgic for my childhood and Christmas time and being with family and being a kid again. It got me back into those emotions of wanting my own space, but still needing my family. You know what I mean?
And it wasn't just nostalgic because I saw this movie as a kid. What they were showing made me nostalgic, and then I was extra nostalgic because I saw the movie and it was fun to rewatch it.
Yes.
And, like, think about those memories. Yeah.
For sure. Cool.
So a couple of things I was, like, lukewarm on.
Okay.
The injuries really, really made me shudder.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they towed a good line where it wasn't gratuitous in some ways. The movie scene at the Plaza Hotel was definitely contrived, you know, where they were, like, actually thinking that this was happening and getting on their knees and stuff.
Yeah.
But I loved it as a kid, and it was really cute and, like, endearing as an adult. But it was, like, a little bit contrived. I don't think they did it as well in this film. And then the pigeon lady, she was a cool and unlikely role model. But then when they were having the discourse at the, like, the
orchestra,
it was a little bit too unrealistic for me. Like, I liked the idea of both of them learning from each other. I think this was a scene that Kevin was a little bit too wise for his years. Like, she was, like, actively looking for advice from him, kind of. It went on a little bit too long. Like, he had too many wise things to say. That one kind of took me out of it as an adult. I was, like, almost rolling my eyes at it a little bit, where I, like, could almost see the writers in the room being like, "Oh, yeah, this is good. This is good stuff."
Yeah. I mean, my notes, dislike, first one is, I have, honestly, meh on the pigeon lady.
Yeah.
I feel like, one, I feel bad calling her the pigeon lady, the woman who fed the pigeons. I just felt like it was kind of an unnecessary side plot. It felt gratuitous. It felt like they were putting her in there to be like this Christmas angel that like guided him on his journey to goodness. And Kevin like repaid her with his advice that like, here, open up your heart to others or, you know, you're going to miss out on things, which isn't inherently bad advice. But this woman was struggling with like real problems of experiencing homelessness and
for like years.
Yeah. And like, oh, if you open your heart, you know, I don't know. It just felt a little eye roll.
And she was like, I literally haven't talked to another human being in a long time. Yeah, it was like a little, like they probably could have cut that whole scene, found a different way for him to motivate to torture the bandits, and it would have been the same movie.
Or just have him, because he was scared by himself in New York, and she was kind, and he was kind of scared of her, and she helped him get his foot unstuck from the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be as simple as that, like, hey, pay it forward.
Yeah.
And it would be fine. We didn't need, like, young 10-year-old, very rich and privileged Kevin telling this woman who's been on hard times to just open up your heart to others and things will work out for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not bad advice. He had the whole, like, metaphor with his rollerblades. Like, he didn't want to ruin his rollerblades, so he never wore them. And then by the time he was ready to wear them, his foot grew too big and he couldn't wear them anymore.
Yeah.
Good metaphor, honestly. Loved it. But the whole scene, it just felt like
preachy in a way.
Forced and preachy and unnecessary. And it just felt like that, like, let's make this a real heartwarming Christmas movie and throw this in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It rang insincere.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And that's why I'm kind of lukewarm on it. It's like, I thought her early stuff was pretty cool. Just like having this person that he was afraid of that he ends up not needing to be afraid of and using that as a way for him to like learn a life lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that it really just comes down to that scene in the orchestra attic that I didn't think was needed.
I mean, I don't even have a problem with him going back and giving her the turtle dove the next day. That's fine.
Yep.
Because she's still an adult and he's still a child.
Yep.
And you can learn from children for sure.
Yeah.
But you know that subreddit like R That Happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole scene is R That Happened for me.
Can I give you a few nitpicks?
Sure. I love your nitpicks.
Cool. First nitpick, most important nitpick. You couldn't buy fireworks in New York since 1909.
He definitely didn't bring them on the plane.
It showed him buying them. You can't do that. It's illegal. You can't sell them in New York. So,
or New Jersey. He can't even go over the border.
Yeah.
And they didn't show him doing that.
The only thing that you
can go to Pennsylvania for that. I know.
Yes. And the only thing that you can legally buy is sparkling devices, which when lit, throw colorful sparks, may have a colorful flame, and or make noise. However, they do not go into the air or explode.
Maybe he bought them on the firework black market, because that definitely exists in New York. People light fireworks all the time in the summer on the weekends.
I don't remember exactly where he bought them, but it was like, it showed him buying them, and it was like just in a store.
So. Did he pay cash?
I think.
So, it was you know the 90s, what? It, so, was, yeah. It was a black market.
So, little nitpick. Another nitpick, like, the parents were so damn dumb. Like, how do you land in Miami, realize your kid's not there, and then go to sleep? Get on a plane.
Go back to Chicago. They thought he was in Chicago at that point.
Yeah, just, like, go back. But, or, like, have the dad stay there and have the mom go there. If he accidentally found his way to Miami, the dad can get him. If he's still in Chicago, the mom can get him. Like, dear Lord, do anything besides go to bed.
They were so nonchalant. But you know what? It's because we were raising a young adult serial killer. Yeah, they're like, I'm more worried for the people around him, honestly.
They saw the writing on the wall and they're like, I don't know if
he's lost. Oh no. Kevin. Buzz is our only hope now.
This one's this is a nitpick. No, it's not a nitpick. It's valid. I called him Piss Kid. I don't know what his name was, but he's the cousin. Just pees in the bed all the time. Stop letting him have soda. It's not that hard. He's a 4-year-old. Just be like, hey, guess what? You are not allowed to drink this right now. I'm going to parent you. Whatever he was. But just be like, you know what? I'm a parent. You can't do this. Stop. The end scene, they're sleeping in the hotel. All the kids are like on cots and like the couch and stuff. And he's in this gigantic king bed with 3 crumpled up cola cans. Just don't let him drink soda.
Gonna have diabetes.
They were like, I already packed the rubber sheets. It's like, maybe just like, don't let him drink soda until 2 in the morning and he won't need to have rubber sheets because he'll stop peeing the bed.
How many times are you gonna say don't let him drink soda today?
It really I literally wrote in all caps, stop letting the piss kid drink soda.
Well, thank you for those nitpicks.
A real one though, a real one, beside the piss kid one, which was real, it could have definitely wrapped faster. I paused the movie when the bandits got arrested. It was still about 15 minutes until the movie ended.
Mm.
If you wanted to have the nice big scene with like the family and all that stuff, and then the turtle doves, that's cool. You probably could have shortened them and also could have cut stuff. This didn't need to be a 2-hour movie.
I don't think so. That was my first note even before we watched it. It's like, is there really enough to fill 2 hours? You know? I only have one other dislike.
Go for it.
The most iconic scene of the movie is probably him watching the sequel movie, the Merry Christmas to You Filthy Animal, and I Believe You, But My Tommy Gun Don't.
Angels with Even Filthier Souls.
Yep, that movie. And it's still iconic. It's still the most quotable line from any of the Home Alone movies, probably.
Yeah, honestly.
But it made me a little, not uncomfortable, but kind of like sad, because I feel like it was soured for me, because the whole scene was basically like violence against women. You know?
Murdering her for potentially kissing people.
Yeah, like allegedly smooching people, even if you like cheating, and he's just like gonna shoot her down, gun her down, you know?
Yep.
And it just made me a little sad, because there are many women who are murdered by their partners every year, every day. And I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm working in the field and you hear a lot of stuff, and it's like, it's a real reality. And it just felt like, oh, it's a funny scene and we're gonna laugh about it. But it just made me a little sad. It soured it for me a little bit.
That's fair.
But it's never okay to murder someone. And Kevin needs to hear that lesson too.
Does he ever?
I don't know. Just a little piece I wanted to mention.
That's fair. So yeah, mine are really, I didn't super enjoy the torturing, and it went a little bit long.
Mm-hmm.
And then enough of the movie, I had to like intentionally, noticeably suspend my disbelief to get into, or not get taken out of. I think there was a little bit too much of it that was a little contrived. Like, it was explicitly setting things up and stuff. I think they could have done it a little bit more gently, but I can't really hold it too hard against them because, like, for a kid's movie, it was pretty good.
I was able to suspend my disbelief for this movie, I think, a little bit more easy than you were.
I think it was just, like, watching it back. It's like, these parents are really, really dumb and really, really negligent, and Kevin is a wicked smart kid. Why didn't he just call the cops? But then it wouldn't be a movie. So it's like, you know.
I was thinking about that. I was like, would the police at the airport, like, report these parents? Just because, like, there's clearly a pattern of them leaving their child.
It's the 90s. Who knows?
I know. Probably not. I don't think so. But it's just something to think about. Yeah. They're so nonchalant about it. We did it again.
I know. The dude hearing that must have been like, CPS?
Yeah. That's what I mean by reportable.
But what did you think? What is your vote? Do you know?
Do you know?
Kind of. Yeah. I think I do.
You go first.
All right. I honestly, I'm pretty on the fence with this one. I think there's parts of it that are milky and then parts of it that are whiny. But I do think that the wine outweighs the milk. So I do think that this was a wine, but much, much less strong of a wine than I thought going into it.
Yeah, I would say this is a very watered down wine.
Like, I was convinced going into it was going to be a great movie, no complaints, besides maybe the torture bits being too long. But I was able to pull out a lot more stuff that I didn't enjoy about the film than I anticipated.
This is a wine that when I was in high school, I drank half a bottle with my friends, and then we poured water in it from the tap, and then tried to stick the cork back in.
This is your best wine metaphor yet. It's always been like, you know, Tupac Chuck or something. This is the best one. That's hilarious. Oh my God.
That's how I feel about it. I don't think it's quite a milk, but it's like tampered wine.
Yeah, like if I was having a bad day, I could easily convince myself that this is a milk and feel okay with that vote. But I don't think that that's honestly, like, it was a fun movie. It's cute. It aged pretty well. There was nothing that was like overly offensive or something like that in it. It just, you know, aged differently than I remembered, which is partially why I love this podcast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the opening, you and I were like big on this. We were like, oh yeah, it's a classic. It's wonderful. But I think we, especially going into it with a critical eye, had somewhat different take on it, which was fun. But
I would say there's no reason to watch this movie if it's not Christmas. The only time I'd ever recommend this to someone is if it's the holiday season and you need something to watch.
And this is probably the first movie where I'm like, maybe think hard before you watch it with your kids.
I would say it's like an every other year movie. It's not an every year staple, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like every other year, every 3 years, every 2 years.
I definitely
throw it in the mix. Throw it in the lineup, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't be sad if we didn't watch this film for a good few years.
Yeah, I'm not ready to watch it until 2022.
But yeah, if you've seen it, throw it in the mix. If you haven't seen it, it's probably worth a watch if you've never seen it. If you have kids, just think about the life lessons that you're trying to teach your kids before you watch this with them. I am not one to say like, oh, video games cause violence and blah, blah, blah. But like the fact that this was showing a little kid repeatedly injuring on purpose adults, having no negative repercussions for it and in some ways being lauded for it, you might just want to think before you show it to your kids.
His parents didn't even know he did that. Like, they're in the dark.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're playing, turning a blind eye. They know he's evil, but anyway.
And if you are into conspiracy theories, watch this, digest it, really tear it apart, and tell us what you think about Kevin's sordid past and future. Mm-hmm. Because he is definitely, this is ripe for conspiracy theories.
Yep. You can hit us up at Winermelk Podcast on Instagram, at Winermelk on Twitter. You can email us at winermelkpodcast@gmail.com. Nope. No at the beginning.
Yep. Winermelkpodcast@gmail.com.
Or our website at www.winermelk.com.
Winermelkpodcast.com.
Wow. I don't know any of our socials.
Nope. And our Facebook page, facebook.com/winermelk.
Just search Winermelk and we might come up. Let us know what you think. Is Kevin a serial killer? I say yes.
And so thank you guys so much for watching or listening. And especially for this one, I think this might be one of our more controversial takes. So definitely let us know what you think about this film. What did we get right? What did we get wrong? We love to hear from you guys. And we're going to... Oh, go ahead.
What's up next?
That's what I was going to say.
What's on the agenda?
We are continuing Christmas week. So this came out on Monday. In 2 days, we have a brand new format for you guys that we're really pumped about. We're doing a rapid fire of multiple of those old, like, quick cartoon children classics. So maybe stop motion. As of recording this, we haven't super locked in our roster yet, but we're going to be doing some of those old, quicker Christmas classics and doing quick takes on them. I'm so excited. It's going to be a great excuse to watch a bunch of movies.
Speed dating Christmas.
And then after that, on Friday, we are doing the wonderful, quintessential, just perfect Christmas Vacation.
This is Kyle's pick, if you couldn't tell.
So that'll be coming out on Friday. And yeah, thank you guys all so much for listening. If you liked this podcast, please, we'd really appreciate if you would like, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays. 'Tis the season.
And have a great day.